The committee will come to order. There is a quorum present. The clerk will note the roll. We're going to be doing, let's see, first of all, Representative McDonald moves approval of the minutes for March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. Any additions or corrections? Seeing no additions or corrections, move approval of the minutes. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The minutes are approved. Today, what we are going to be doing is bonding proposals for our HHS bonding projects. I plan to lay the bills over. And then what we are going to be doing is we will not be acting on any of the proposals individually. What we will do is hear all of them, and then we will be sending a letter to Chair Torkelson that the bills have been given a hearing and that they can be taken up for committee action from the Capital Investment Committee at that time. Also, members, we have had difficulty getting a quorum here at 12:45. I don't know what the problem is with scheduling with other committees, but if we do need to change the committee time or whatever we need to do, we will do that, or we can recess and come back. But it's really not in very good use of our committee time, or the particularly testifiers, many of whom come from the general public, travel here. It's not very sympathetic to their time. So I would appreciate it if people can't be here, at least to establish a quorum, that they let the committee administrator know, and we'll make other arrangements for the committee time. And I don't say that from one side of the aisle or the other. We've been having difficulty getting quorum every single day. So hopefully that won't be an issue in the future, so that we can get out of Dodge here. And it's going to get worse, not better, as committee meetings start overlapping more. So I would appreciate it. I know we're at lunchtime, but I just would appreciate it if folks could get here on time. Members, what we have Minnesota Department of Health. We have Minnesota Department of Health first. Folks, if you want to just introduce yourself for the record, and we'll proceed with the first up, which will be some health-related bills.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Abigail Mosier. I'm the Chief Financial Officer at the Minnesota Department of Health, and with me is Joanne Barkas, the Public Health Lab Director. I'll start us off, and then she will take over. So, most Minnesotans actually don't hear much about our public health lab. It's kind of a nondescript building over over on the corner of the Capitol campus here, but it's actually really the foundation of our work to protect the health of Minnesotans, and it's really important to invest in it to keep our public health system strong. So we did just want to draw attention to our proposal that we have in the governor's capital budget recommendations. It is for $2.335 million. To replace aging lab instruments and to purchase equipment that will be necessary to continue the work of the lab going forward. And in particular, the fact sheet actually was provided in your packets, I hope, which expands a little bit on what was included in the governor's recommendations. And it really highlights that demands for testing have become more frequent and complex. Key laboratory equipment is aging, and there's no dedicated funding mechanism to replace that equipment for our department. So I will turn it over to the lab director to talk a little more in detail.
Thank you, Abby. So as Abby mentioned, my name is Joanne Barkas. I'm the director of the Public Health Laboratory here in Minnesota. And so we did move into our new building, which I don't think is quite nondescript, but it is a very nice building. Some of the equipment that we brought with us 10 years ago was already aging. Some equipment was purchased new when the building was completed, and that equipment is now 10 years old and is starting to get to the end of its useful service life. And one of the issues is that not only have the instruments aged, but the vendors that sold us the instruments are no longer supporting that equipment. So if they break down, we have no mechanism to repair them, so they will have to be replaced. To give you a little bit of background on what we do in the laboratory, I know some of you are familiar with it, but we monitor for a wide variety of health threats that impact the lives of Minnesotans. Of course, infectious diseases have been in the headlines recently. We are currently ramping up to test for Zika virus. We are an Ebola test laboratory. We do a lot of population-based monitoring for things like influenza, some routine things, but also some rather unique things. So we're the only laboratory in the state that does, for example, rabies testing. In the environmental arena, we test water and other environmental matrices for a variety of environmental contaminants. We are the only radiation testing laboratory for drinking water in the state of Minnesota. And we also test human clinical samples for emerging contaminants such as the perfluorochemicals in the East Metro. That's a program that we refer to as biomonitoring. Of course, you're all familiar with the fact that we test for heritable and congenital disorders in newborns in the state of Minnesota. And, of course, we're heavily involved in testing for agents of chemical and bioterrorism should we have any incidents in the state of Minnesota. The instrumentation that we use for this testing is very sophisticated. It's not only does the technology move rapidly, but these instruments are sometimes kind of finicky, and the vendors replace them pretty regularly or routinely. For example, one vendor will buy another vendor and then discontinue an instrument, leaving us sort of high and dry. And mostly what's happened recently with a number of our instruments, especially for radiation testing, is that the computer systems cannot keep up with current IT standards. So part of this, what brought this to a head was the upgrade to Windows 7, which we can't do on a number of our instruments. Some of them actually are still running DOS and using a dot matrix printer. So we have some fairly old technologies. So this request for capital investment is for $2.3 million, which would fund the purchase of roughly 15 instruments in all of those categories that we do testing, infectious disease, environmental, and newborn screening. We feel that this is an important investment. We primarily serve other agencies. So we do work with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, the Minnesota Department of Transportation, the DNR, and of course our own programs within the Department of Health. And we don't have a way to pass the costs on easily to our customers. In addition, we don't usually have private sector customers that we can pass those costs on to. I think that pretty much sums up the needs, and I'd be happy to take any questions that you might have about the need for these instruments and our approach to this.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there questions from committee members? Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for being here today. And I hope that Minnesotans realize that your lab is a nation-leading lab, and that Minnesota's been really a leader in sometimes identifying threats, whether it's food safety or other kinds of threats. And I know a few years ago, a lot of legislators toured the facility too. And I see on your information sheet here that this is a request from the general fund. So I assume that this is not something that one could bond for, probably. I'm just wondering, I'm kind of curious because there's no bill here before us. I assume that there is a bill and that you've tried to get a sponsor for your bill, or what's the situation with that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, this will be carried in the governor's capital investment bill. So. When that bill is released is our understanding. That was the direction we were received.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so it is in the capital investment. It's just cash from the capital investment bill, where there's some expectation or hope that there'll be some cash, not just bonding. Is that it? So you don't, in other words, you don't really need a bill here today. You just want all of us to be aware.
Mr. Chair and members, that is correct. This is not a bond-eligible item. due to the nature of the equipment and the instruments that would be purchased. And so when it was included in the governor's recommendations, it was included as general fund cash. And it will be carried in that bill, but then would need to be a cash item.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. And as I remember from the bonding committee, you can build for a, you can bond for a hockey rink, but not a Zamboni, and you can bond for a zoo, but not a dolphin. And I also learned that Zambonis and dolphins cost the same, about $100,000 a piece. Things you learn around here, right? Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the testifiers. It's clear that the public health lab is something that is serving the state of Minnesota, and we're in the best shape possible as a state when we know as little as possible about what's going on. Because if we're hearing about you in the news, we're having a disease outbreak or some contaminated water or something. So the less we know, the better, maybe, in some cases. But I do want to underscore something that I heard that I kind of find shocking. With the role that you play in preventing disease outbreak and educating the public and making sure that we are able to deal with things like bioterrorism and pandemics, the thought that we have another agency that is dealing with equipment and computers that are so outdated that they're still DOS and dot matrix, and it is really concerning because we can't function to the best of our ability as a state. We can't serve the public to the best of our ability as a state when we continue to hamper the ability of our agencies to work the most efficiently. And so the fact that we have yet another place in our government that I'm hearing this is of great concern. So I just wanted to highlight that because this work is very critical to the health and safety of the people of our state, and we love to think of our state as a healthy state, and we want to make sure that our citizens are protected, and this work is critical to that. So I think that modernizing equipment is not just important, but it's vital to the ongoing safety of our citizens. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question for the testifier and maybe also House staff, Mr. Burke. Oftentimes, cities will put monies away and budget each year for capital improvement. And, of course, your equipment is very expensive, and you know at times they're going to need to be replacement. Are you allowed, is DHS allowed, to set money aside in a capital improvement project for a number of years until that particular equipment is necessary to purchase?
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the question. Most of the funding that goes to the public health lab is subject to the biennial cancellation, which means that if there were savings or underspending that would occur in a year that would allow for saving up, that money would cancel at the end of the biennium and would not be available beyond that time.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, thank you very much. And then Mr. Burke also signified that it is not, state law does not allow that. Thank you.
And I know we are always looking at ways of improving our bonding policy and looking at embedded maintenance costs within new construction and also equipment costs for facilities. And I want to thank you for coming today and for all the good work that you do. And I know that the commissioner always is happy to accommodate members who would like a tour of the facility. And it's really a beautiful building and great staff. And I know that that you like to have members through. So I would encourage members who haven't gone through to go ahead and do that. I know that it is nation leading and that these are kind of scary things that you have to deal with. But after having gone through it, I know that we're in very, very good hands with the staff and also the facilities there. We're lucky to have that as an asset. So we do thank you, and we look forward to the recommendations from the governor's budget as well as other recommendations coming forward. So thank you very much today, and thanks to the commissioner for your time here today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next up today, we're going to have DHS. So if we'd have Commissioner Piper and Deputy Commissioner Johnson are ready and on deck. Welcome back to the committee, commissioners.
Thank you.
You're our repeat customers this past week. So welcome back to the committee. Please bring us up to speed on your bonding requests.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. We're very excited about our bonding proposals this year and in the governor's bonding requests. And I'd like to acknowledge that we have staff here all the way from St. Peter and Wilmer and all across the state here today. So thank you all for being here as well. This slide shows our direct bonding requests. We have phase two of security hospital upgrades to our Anoka hospital. We have both St. Peter site-specific and site-to-be-determined proposals for our state sex offender program. We have bonding for early childhood learning facilities that we'll be talking about today, system-wide asset preservation, and also a preview of the Dorothy Day bonding request that's included in the governor's budget or bonding request as well. So first off, setting the table about who we care for at in our direct care and treatment, and we covered most of this last Thursday, so I won't belabor the point. We serve over 10,000 people in our direct care and treatment area at Human Services, serving some of the most vulnerable people in the state of Minnesota. At Anoka and at St. Peter, we serve competency restoration participants in our program, who are people who are coming to the Commissioner of Human Services in order to have their competency restored to stand trial for crimes. We also at Anoka Recall have really people in real acute mental health crisis that we are caring for in that hospital. At State Security Hospital, we care for mentally ill and dangerous people that are committed as mentally ill and dangerous to the Commissioner of Human Services. So our number one priority for our bonding proposal is to fund phase two at our state security hospital. We have the goals of creating a more therapeutic environment, a safer environment for our staff, and physical separations and other improvements to our facility that will allow us to better separate our population between more vulnerable people and more aggressive people. The total cost of phase two of the state security hospital investment is a little over $70 million. This includes 65 beds for pre-transition patients being remodeled on units 100, 200, and 300. It actually reduces the footprint of beds from 67 to 65 to accommodate accessible bathrooms for those units. It includes a 15-bed unit for acute women that come into our hospital. Currently, all women are housed on the same unit regardless of acuity. And creates a new 8-bed unit for special populations, which will be in the west pod of unit 700. It creates a new 14-bed acute care unit and includes transition housing, which will include two 24-bed units. So this bed just highlights some of the phase one renovations that are coming online, including new transition units, a new social center, and central plant facilities. The next is just a visual picture of some of the real challenges we have at Security Hospital. You can see that there are narrow stairways across the facility, split levels, and limited sight lines, which negatively impacts the security and safety for the people that work there. And this building design really contributes to the issues that we have trying to manage the patient population that we do, and also it doesn't facilitate effective and safe staffing given the level of acuity of patients that we have at our hospital. So these are just more pictorials clockwise from upper left. The first picture on the top left-hand side is the courtyard of Unit 700. You can see that it's not level, and it actually allows someone in the courtyard unit or in the courtyard to look up into the units of other patients. In the middle top, this picture is taken from the lower landing of a one-bedroom pod, and you can see that there is a narrow hallway, steps, and poor observation from the unit station on the floor. The third picture is as you're leaving Unit 700, you can see, you kind of can see in the distance the length and the challenges that staff are having trying to travel down that ramp to respond to a patient alert in that unit. Number four is the view staff have from the general unit office area, and you're looking towards a lower hall and an upper level bedroom unit, so the split level is evident in that photo. And then number five is a typical nursing unit, and the way that, and I don't know how many of you went down to Security Hospital to see this, but the nursing facilities are separate from the rest of the staff facilities on each unit, which doesn't create a good environment for purposes of care team collaboration or communication. And then the final picture is a view staff have from the general unit office area, and you're looking towards a lower level and an upper level bedroom area. This is just a picture of some of the real improvements that are going to be made to our facilities in phase one, and we're hopeful that fully funding phase two, we can have more of this environment has improved sight lines and improved therapeutic environment for the people that are there. Our second priority are the changes that we would like to make at our Anoka Hospital. And we talked a bit about this on, and I think Jackie Spangers from AFSCME did a good job of talking about this last Thursday at your hearing. We talked about already the complex nature of the people that we're serving and that there are more people admitted from jails, and that's creating patient acuity and other challenges we have at our hospital. So Anoka's proposed $2.25 million. It's redoing three courtyards that are in each unit, and also adding courtyards onto the three remaining units. The way that Anoka is set up, there's a central courtyard that certain patients, when they're ready, can access on a regular basis, and then three of the units have small courtyards on the units themselves for patients to go out and have sunlight and have fresh air. Three of the units don't have those at all, and the three that do have it have they're really in tough shape, and so this improves those three and then adds three onto the three remaining. It also includes a facility-wide camera system and a personal dress system that Jackie Spanger spoke really eloquently about. These are safety features that one would find in any inpatient psychiatric facility. These are, in our opinion, must-haves to provide even the fundamental safety protections and duress response systems that one would come to expect in a facility like this. Our third priority is our St. Peter Sex Offender Program, Phase 2. This includes improvements to the buildings down at St. Peter on the St. Peter campus for our programs for people who are transitioning outside of the razor wire into our community preparation services. So it's considered a transfer by the courts. They aren't moving off of the footprint of Security Hospital. They're moving outside the razor wire to a transitional type of facility. We need this because we are seeing extensive growth in the population that the courts are transitioning from inside of the razor wire of our program. They're transferring outside of the razor wire to our transitional services, and we're running out of room, frankly. And we can see that this is only projected to increase. This isn't, people in community preparation services are not in, it's not a treatment phase of the program. It really is a transition back to try and give people the tools that they will need should they be provisionally or otherwise discharged from the courts. It's really focused on reintegration for people that have been in our sex offender program for a significant length of time. Our fourth priority are less restrictive alternative facilities for our state sex offender program, and this proposal is modeled after what has been proposed in past years for our state sex offender program. It essentially would fund two 20-bed facilities that the state would own and operate that would be used to house people that need assisted living level of care, and would be the people that live there would need assisted living level of care, but then they also would need to be provisionally discharged by the courts from our program. Right now, people are being provisionally discharged from our program, and currently we're required to contract with private companies all across the state to find housing solutions for those sex offenders who the courts deem ready for provisional discharge. And this would allow us this would allow us the flexibility in our own facilities to provide safe, secure living facilities for people who are some of the hardest for us to place, that there perhaps aren't as easily accessible private providers waiting to provide care for them, because they do need that higher level of care in addition to the security needs that need to be met for anyone being provisionally discharged out of our program. They also need that higher level of care for some complex conditions that they have in addition to their being sex offenders in our program. Now I'll turn it over to Chuck Johnson to talk about early childhood facilities.
Mr. Chair and members, early childhood facilities is our fifth priority. The governor is requesting $15 million in general obligation bonds and $5 million in general fund cash. The early childhood program is one that's been funded off and on and has been funded through the recent cycles. It's essentially a grant program that we put out to communities who want to do some renovation, building, remodeling on facilities for early childhood programming. And we've gotten good response over the last several cycles in a number of places. It does require a 50% match, so that is different, again, than some of the other approach to bonding. Next slide shows the grants that have been provided over the last, more than 20 years at this point, and also has, you can make out the difference between the diamonds and the circles, which ones are over more recent cycles and which ones are some of the older ones that have been funded previously. But a pretty good spread across the state, and we're intentional about trying to reach out to all communities. The reason that the governor's proposal has both GO bonds and general fund in it, the general fund would be available essentially to nonprofit organizations, and I think Head Start is a good candidate where certainly we've heard a lot of interest. But also for general obligation bonds, as you heard earlier, they're only available to political subdivisions. So with how we've done this in the past using general obligations bond, it's usually a school district that's involved in the proposal somehow, sometimes a county or others, maybe working with other community partners. But the general fund would allow Head Start and other nonprofits who are in the early childhood world to be able to get access to doing some remodeling and improvement as well. Particularly important for demand on this program right now has been the extension of all-day kindergarten. It's put a lot of pressure on facilities across a number of school districts, which has, in some cases, pushed out the early childhood program and pushed them to other buildings. So we're getting a lot of interest now from school districts, other community partners, about trying to find more space and improve existing space to create more opportunities for quality early childhood in our communities.
Our sixth priority is system-wide asset preservation. We're seeking $1.5 million to maintain and preserve the investments we already have here at DHS, and we do not have the budget to absorb the costs in our normal biennial budget, and so are seeking $1.5 million in the governor's budget proposal. And then finally, I just would like to highlight the great work that Catholic Charities does at the Dorothy Day Center, which is included in the governor's bonding request for human services. The governor is asking for $12 million in GO bonds this session to fund the first two floors of Phase 2, Dorothy Day's Opportunity Center, which is a one-stop shop for critical services for self-sufficiency. It includes a health care clinic, showers, access to military and veterans benefits, and also job search related activities and assistance. The overall project cost is estimated to be $100 million to be covered through private-public partnership. The author of that bill is a very good guy. The Dorothy Day Center serves over 6,000 people a year, provides 75,000 nights on mats, and serves over 300,000 meals a year to some of the most needy people in the St. Paul area. So with that, thank you for your interest in the governor's bonding proposal this year, and we're happy to answer any questions you have at this time or any time.
Thank you, Commissioner Piper. First up, we have Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner, for coming and helping fill gaps in our system. I had a question about your first priority at the security hospital, and we'd seen before, you know, sort of the bad design that you're having to struggle with now. But on page 10, you gave us a picture of an acute housing day room, and I have to say, since the average length of time I think that people stay is like 7 years that are in your mental health services, this doesn't look very homey or therapeutic. Or do they have other places? I mean, this to me looks like a lunchroom. And I understand, given the security needs, you may have to have furniture locked down to the floor, and, you know, it can't be quite, you know, the same as a typical congregant living situation, but this doesn't at all feel like home. And, you know, most of these people in this particular program have not done criminal things. They just happen to have unstable, serious mental health issues. And can you tell us a little bit about what this room would be used for? And are there more natural, homey-type settings for people who are there for very long, extended periods?
Commissioner Piper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Loeffler. Carol Olson is here today, and maybe she can come down and talk about the benefits of this new design. I have to say, the first time I toured Security Hospital, I very much felt that it was not an environment conducive to therapy or recovery, and so I'm excited about these proposals and what I've heard from Carol and others about the improvements in the quality of the environment for the patient.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Olson. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Yeah. So my name is Carol Olson. I'm the Executive Director of Forensic Services in St. Peter. Thank you, Chair. The environment that you're seeing in that picture is the day room of one of the new acute units that's being created. Off of the day room, though, there are multiple different small group rooms, a sensory room, a TV room, some other areas for patients to relax. From the area that the staff will be working out of, that's the area that they will see. And down each of the extensions, there's hallways where all the bedrooms will be. We are also creating a lot of spaces in our social center that will offer opportunities for people to relax in a canteen, social area, library, a chapel area, small group rooms, large group rooms, a gym. So, and in the picture is also, the picture that I saw was in black and white. We're creating a lot of soft environmental feeling with the textures that are being used for the flooring and for the wall, the furniture, the color schemes that we're using. The architectural firm that we worked with had a design expert that worked with us in helping us create environments based on color and material to make it soft and provide comfort. So I think the picture doesn't show really what the environment is that we're creating.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, Thank you, Mr. Chair and Dr. Olson. Maybe you could just tell us what happens in this particular room. It sounds like there's other alternatives, but if this is where people are expected to spend most of their time, that was my concern. I mean, it's different than being in a group therapy setting, but it just feels like I'd hang out in my room rather than hang out on a bench at a table all day long.
So we had to balance security and safety with the environment. And so in that particular picture, the furniture is, the tables and the chairs are secure to the floor so that we don't have them flying at staff and or other patients that are in the environment. That would be the area where the individuals that are served there would eat their lunches or their meals. And there would likely be, card playing and different things like that that could occur in that area. But off from that area is smaller group room areas, TV rooms, sensory rooms, and, of course, their bedrooms that they can go to. And there will be a lot of off-unit activity areas and areas to socialize as well as have programming occurring.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure that what we invest in with this big a price tag is actually something that contributes to people feeling like they're in a place that's going to move them forward.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Piper, the last year the St. Peter's had some renovations, I think, for security and cameras and some site visions and stuff. And I think it was around $11 million appropriation. Just wondering, is that added on to some of the needs for this proposal as well, or is that completed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald. I'd let Carol Olson speak to the investments that have been made since the last time the legislature appropriated funding for improving the buildings at Security Hospital.
Ms. Olson.
Money was used to renovate an area within our current Minnesota Security Hospital, and we created a 4-bed admissions area. It was felt that was critical after the murder that occurred of the one patient to separate out our individuals that are coming in at admission from our crisis unit. And so that environment was created. We will not be remodeling that area with the second phase of bonding. That will stay as it is. We also added a lot of cameras, and that was also due to the concerns about staff safety, as well as the individuals that were serving, the safety of them. And so we added a lot of cameras with that, and those will be used in second phase of bonding. So that's... We didn't need to add the additional dollars for cameras, although we are adding a lot more cameras because we weren't able to camera up the whole building.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So did that project, the $11 million, did they exhaust all the appropriations, or was there any left over?
That money was all used. Correct.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. And I just had a question about that. Is there anything that we constructed with the last bonding proposal and construction, the design and construction of that space, is that going to be repurposed? Are we keeping that, or what's the status of that once the next phase is completed within the current request?
Chair, the first phase of bonding is not completed yet, if that's what you're asking. So the first phase of bonding is in progress right now, and we will be moving into that newly constructed facility sometime this fall, and if we are successful at getting the second phase of bonding money, then we will be going through multiple phases. The second phase of bonding is actually going to be inside what we currently are using in Minnesota Security Hospital, so we will continue to house patients down in Bartlett Hall, which is on lower campus, in order to vacate some of the units within Minnesota Security Hospital to do the demolishing and reconstruction, and then we will move patients into that when that's completed and empty out the other side of the building in order to remodel the other side of the building. So I'm hoping I'm answering your question.
Yeah, I was just wondering if the portions that were that are currently just recently completed or in the process of being completed, if those will be used as swing space or if they will have to in fact be demolished in order to make for new space coming up?
No, the current construction project is building parts of our new hospital.
Okay. All right. I think that's helpful. Also, I just had a question about the governor's request for additional 20-bed facilities for provisionally discharged folks with medically complicated needs. I would assume that's nursing home level of care. Would that be right, or what is the level of care that they would need that would be different from other people who would be discharged?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you're speaking to the state sex offender program, those sex offenders who are provisionally discharged from the courts, the level of care that these facilities would accommodate would be an assisted living level of care. So a step down from a nursing home level of care, more assisted living facilities that would provide supports but not at that nursing home level of care.
And this kind of reflects the fact that the sex offenders are aging and they're getting old and their medical needs are changing and that they represent different risks. I remember the nursing home level of care that's associated with the St. Peter Hospital. Does that currently accept sex offenders who are provisionally discharged, or how does that work?
Chair, so the forensic nursing home accepts three different populations. We serve individuals that are from our forensics that are committed mentally ill and dangerous. We also serve individuals who are committed in the MSOP system, and we also serve individuals from the Department of Corrections. It does not require any court process to move them to the nursing home because it's considered a secure nursing home.
And what is the how many more people could that facility accept before it's full?
It is a 48-bed nursing home, and we currently house, our average census there is 34.
So you're about 5-6 people from full on an average day?
That's correct, Chair. We do not currently have a waiting list. So individuals who would come to our nursing home would have to meet the criteria to go into a nursing home similar to any other community nursing home.
And the I believe when that facility was requested by Governor Plenty, I believe it was a similar provision where there was not site-specific originally, and I could be corrected if I'm wrong. The current request is not site-specific, and obviously could be controversial. Did you look at adding on to the existing facility within the campus for cost reasons and for the availability to add beds quicker?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not clear on whether or not it was explored specific to the less restrictive alternative facility locations to look on the St. Peter campus. I know that we are expanding on the St. Peter campus and have been through our community preparation services, and part of our proposal here today is to expand within the footprint of the security or the St. Peter campus that, but I'm looking at Carol Olson to, I'm not sure.
Chair, I guess I cannot answer that.
All right. And just if you maybe just follow up with if there was planning documents or anything around the specific policy decision to move that off campus or the need generated that says that we need a higher level of medical care available outside of the facility, of just kind of what the rationale is for that policy change. And then also, if you could just remind me of how many beds we've added at CPS within the last bonding requests, because as I remember from my last tour, we were adding quite a bit of space within that, within CPS, and I don't know how many beds we've added recently.
Mr. Chair, the first phase from the 2014 bonding request added 60 beds total. So 30 of those have come online, 30 more will come online this fall. And then the phase two that we have before you here would add another 30, which would be online by 2018.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. So currently we have half of the 60 allotted 2014 beds are done. 30 will be done within a year and online?
Mr. Chair, by fall this year.
And how many people are in the CPS program currently?
Mr. Chair, right now we have capacity for 53. We actually have 59 in the program. We have six people that we're housing in converted offices and group space. We also have 12, I think it's 12 or 13 on the waiting list to get into CPS. So the 30 beds that come online this fall will probably pretty much fill immediately as we bring them online.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. Other questions? All right, seeing none, thanks, commissioners, and thanks to the governor for your time today and putting together your proposal. We do appreciate it. Representative Johnson. Welcome to the committee, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It's my pleasure to present two bills that will finance the reconstruction and construction at the St. Peter Regional Treatment Center. I want to remind the committee that there are two distinct programs there, and sometimes that's confusing for a lot of folks, and one is the security hospital, and of course the other is the sex offender program. We'd like to start by talking about the security hospital. In a moment, I've asked several representatives of three of the bargaining units at the security hospital to testify. But to get started, we'd like to start by showing a video to kind of give you a better view of that, so those of you who have not had the opportunity to tour the security hospital can kind of get in the facility and see what it looks like.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Please proceed.
Hi, I'm Emily Piper, Commissioner of Human Services. I'm here today at St. Peter Security Hospital. St. Peter is where the mentally ill and dangerous in Minnesota come to live and receive treatment. Many of the buildings here are old and they're unsafe. We have an obligation to ensure that the people who come to work here are coming to work in the safest environment possible, and that the people who live here and are receiving treatment here can do so in the most therapeutic environment that we can provide.
Minnesota Security Hospital is the only secure environment in the state of Minnesota that serves individuals who are committed mentally ill and dangerous. So it not only serves individuals in St. Peter or in the county of Nicollet, it serves all 87 counties in the state of Minnesota. The majority of the individuals that we serve do recover and can move into the community and to transition into more integrated settings. Some of them transition through our transition services program and then into the community. But we also have a lot of individuals who actually go right from Minnesota Security Hospital back into the community. All the work in phase two is actually happening within the Minnesota Security Hospital. So it includes demolishing some of our current treatment units. Three of our current treatment units will actually be demolished and rebuilt to single level housing units for our patients. We will add an additional unit that's a smaller 14 bed unit. It also includes remodeling of four of the remaining treatment units. Right now in Minnesota Security Hospital, we have one treatment environment for women. And so when you're admitted, if you're a female, you are admitted to that unit. But that unit also houses individuals who are in crisis, who are experiencing pretty acute symptoms of their mental illness. With our new construction, we will actually create different areas for women. We'll have an admissions area for women. We'll have an area for women who are in crisis. And we'll have a treatment unit for women who are working on their recovery and moving towards, hopefully, into the community or into our transition services program. When I shared that with that female patient, she was really excited to hear that and felt that that would have made a difference in her recovery and that she probably would have recovered quicker. Our current MSH building has multiple levels on each of the treatment environments, and so there's living units that are down steps, living units that are up steps, a lot of blind spot areas in the building. So it is not a safe environment for the current patients that we're serving there, and it has not been safe for the staff that have to work in that environment. Also, completion of phase two will allow us to separate the two populations that exist on the St. Peter campus. Separating those two populations is important because of the vulnerability of the individuals that we serve. Our individuals are considered vulnerable adults, where most of the individuals in the Minnesota Sex Offender Program are not. Currently, both those populations can commingle on the lower campus, and it just increases the vulnerabilities of the people that we're serving. It's important for us to get this project done now because Minnesota Security Hospital, as I said, is an institution that we have served individuals in for close to 35 years. There has been incredible advancements in mental health treatment and recovery. It is a tired, old building, and we need to create an institution where recovery will happen quicker. Moving people through their recovery and back to society quicker costs us less money. By approving this bonding and building and remodeling Minnesota Security Hospital, we will create an environment that we will be proud of and that will serve individuals from this state who have mental health issues.
Thank you for watching this video. I hope you learn more about one of our important projects for 20.
All right. Thank you, Representative Johnson. And Representative Johnson, I will move House File 2609 be laid over. We have the bill before us. Representative Johnson, to the bill.
Okay. A point of question, should this be House File 2394?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Sorry about that. We'll move House File 2394. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And before we get started, I just want to mention that there's 800 employees at the Security Hospital, and those folks do remarkable service for the citizens of Minnesota. I think it's fair to say they are working one of the most complex working environments and do some of the most difficult work. And so I'm very proud to bring three of those employees before us today, and I'll let a representative for the Minnesota Nurses Association introduce herself and give her testimony.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and Committee. My name is Ann Maltreder. I'm a registered nurse. I've worked multiple years now at both Security Hospital and the Competency Restoration Program that is part Security Hospital. This bonding is incredibly important to us. The environment we work in right now and for a long time has been unsafe. We've seen that over and over from a nursing standpoint, trying to treat our patients with these often cramped living conditions is difficult. I worked with our women, female population for a number of years, and as you saw in the video, them trying to go through their treatment and recover at the same time as, you know, when they're being housed in the same place as the women going through severe crisis, is very hard on them. Just kind of the physical aspects of the units we work on, our nursing stations are far removed from the rest of our team members. We don't have real treatment areas. If they do have medical needs, the small hallways, the cramped spaces to bedrooms, any medical or psychiatric emergency makes it incredibly difficult to access, especially if you have a lot of extra staff bodies in those places. So, Yeah. I think overall we are in desperate need of improving our facility, making it a better place to work, a safer place for our patients, would really help retain those skilled staff to make it a place that we really want to work at and really want to be a part of. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony today. All right. Representative Johnson, you have any other testimony?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to introduce Lynn Butcher, who represents MAPE. There's a wide, diverse mix of professional employees at the facility.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair and members. My name is Lynn Butcher. I'm a learning and development specialist working for Department of Human Services and supporting forensic services for the last 9 years. One of my roles is to provide orientation for new employees as they come into forensic services. And we focus a lot on creating safe and therapeutic relationships with patients, with the notion that when our patients feel safe at a deep level with our staff, they will be less aggressive and they will be able to progress through treatment. We do a really good job of forming that foundation of safety. But one thing that training cannot fix are blind corners. And one thing that training cannot fix are narrow corridors, where both staff and patients can get trapped by more predatory or aggressive patients. One thing that training cannot fix are split-level landings. Many of our patients have, in addition to their mental health issues, they have physical health issues. And so if there is a medical emergency that occurs on one of the split levels, trying to get the patient down from that level, trying to get staff to be able to respond on that level is dangerous both for the patients and for the staff. There are twisted ankles as people run down corridors. In the slideshow that you saw, the ramp off of Unit 700, people slip on that. People fall, people twist ankles. And so it's not just about safety and aggression. It is also about the physical environment and being able to respond.
All right. Thank you. Questions?
And then, Mr. Chair, next I'd like to introduce Tim Headley with the AFSCME Union in St. Peter.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Headley. Introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, representatives, my name is Tim Headley. I'm a security counselor at the St. Peter, Minnesota Security Hospital. I'm also the local 404 AFSCME president there. I appreciate all the earlier questions and concerns. I like to go back to what Carol said about balancing safety and security and patient care. In regards to safety, again, you heard a lot about blind spots. We're hoping that this new bonding bill in the second phase will offer new line sites, which meaning better unit observations, safer unit rounds in regards to ensuring clients' care. On top of that, I heard something about bedrooms, and it brought me back to our clients that we serve on Unit 700. That's where I work. Those bedrooms, as of now, are constructed of concrete beds, hard walls, rough corners, and things like that. And those are those one areas when you talk about where do you hang out, where do you want to hang out. Well, those bedrooms are their place where they get to bring their personal items. This is where they hang the pictures from home. This is where they get to get away from the 24 patients that share that same occupied space with them. So we're hoping that this new bonding bill can improve that and bring back more of a home environment for them to receive treatment in. In turn, leading to less aggressive patients, hopefully, and less idle hands and things like that. As a lead on our unit, one of my duties is to put in work orders. And I know we talked a lot about care and we've talked about safety and security, but I'd like to bring this back to the bonding bill again even further. I'm putting constant reports in about plumbing that's not working for our client, showers, lights, heating, air conditioning. Again, this is residential. This is a 24-hour operation that doesn't stop. It's year-round. So if you can imagine, this is a never-ending function. This facility is why it needs replacement, renewal, and so on and so forth. And I guess I just want to recognize those in our physical department, those laborers in the carpentry, plumbing, and electrical areas for doing such a great job for maintaining the environments that we have now. But again, really, really want to let you know I support this bonding bill, and I hope you do too, and appreciate your guys' time and attention today. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the testifiers. I think I know the answer to the question, but we've taken a lot of testimony and whatnot. Why do you do it? Why did you choose this field, if you will? Like I said, I think I know the answer, but I'd like to hear it from you.
you probably heard over and over again, after a while, you know, it's about providing for others. It's about the challenge. I accept that challenge. I do see good results at the end. I see some bad things. It's good and bad. It's all of that together. And again, it's that fine balance that we can't stop speaking about. That's our biggest struggle. How do we perform that balance? And I'm just, I don't know. I look forward to that challenge. I go in it every day. You're always learning something new. Mental illness is something that's ever evolving. So there's training constantly. There's always something to improve on or learn further about. It's individuality, and it's unique. So that's a big part of it. You know, not one person is the same, and I think we're taught that as we grow throughout our lifetime, and that's true. I believe that stands true. So every individual that we can connect with and we can make improvement and have them improve their lives when being integrated back in society is a great accomplishment when we can do that.
Thank you.
Yep.
I think that, first of all, there's a great deal of personal satisfaction in being able to directly impact people's lives. When we're talking about our patients, we often read in newspapers about these being the most dangerous people in Minnesota. As part of my orientation, as I prepare new employees to work for our facility, I refer to them as the most vulnerable people in our society. These are people who, most of which, had they been able to be helped earlier in their path, would not have ended up in a facility such as ours. But once they get there, they're Minnesotans, and they are Minnesotans who need help. And the people who work in our programs sacrifice their marriages, they sacrifice their personal lives, they sacrifice time with their children, because it's a Minnesota value to care for those vulnerable people. And it's one that I share.
Thank you. All right.
You don't have to comment.
I think next we're going to have Ms.
So
Abderholden. Representative Liebling.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to, before Ms. Abderholden starts, I just want to thank the testifiers. That really gave me chills.
Right.
I'm sure we all felt that way, and I appreciate that Representative Hamilton asked the question. And just want to say, I think on behalf of all of us, that we really, really appreciate the work that you do and that the rest of your coworkers do there, because, you know, especially that last lady who spoke and, you know, talked about the Minnesota value of taking care of the vulnerable, and really appreciate that you all are willing to do that.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Abderholden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. And I just wanted to speak in favor of the bill. The renovation is really about the people who are being treated there. We have a small but very committed group of family members whose sons, daughters, wives, or husbands are being treated there, who care deeply about what is going on there, and really feel that it is time to have a change in the environment. We do know that environment plays a huge role in resiliency and recovery. We need to make sure that at St. Peter we have the same there. People are there a long time, often 8 years, and so I just want you to think about being in a space that is not conducive to recovery, that has bland walls, you know, cement blocks, difficult to put your personal effects up there. And I just want to remind people, too, that, you know, the family members who, you know, have a loved one there, often they've ended up there because our community mental health system hasn't been built. So it isn't that, you know, these are people who have very serious mental illnesses that didn't get the treatment that they needed, and they do have loved ones in the community that are waiting for them to come home. And if we can reduce the time there because we've changed the physical environment, I think we'll have done a really good job there. So just want to again say that NAMI strongly supports this bill. We really do need to move forward with this. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Abderholden. Representative
Jeff. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to thank all the testifiers, and I want to remind the committee that this is a statewide program that happens to be located in St. Peter, and what you heard from the testifiers who work at the facility is kind of a vibe that I say ripples through the community, and that community has hosted this facility for a long time, so this is a very important to the community, but again, this is a statewide program that really needs your support, and therefore I ask for the support of the bill.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Is there anybody else who would like to testify on behalf of 2394? Seeing none, 2394 is laid over. Representative Johnson, you also have House File 2395. Would you like to go to that?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief with this.
I will move House File 2395, and the motion will be that it also be laid over. Representative Johnson, your bill.
I'll just speak briefly about this. I think the testimony from Mr. Johnson and Ms. Johnson-Piper, lots of Johnsons here today, appropriately stated the need for this. The courts are increasing. We're seeing more and more folks that are in the sex offender program being removed from the razor wire, the very secure facility, to a less secure facility. And again, St. Peter is host to, in essence, a less secure facility on that campus. I hope you appreciate what that means and that the obligations that are there, that are incumbent there with that. The Community Preparation Services needs more beds. And as the courts are moving, requiring more folks to leave the secure facility, we absolutely need those beds. And it's hard for me to picture an alternative. The alternative that is the current system, the current community preparation services that we have operating there, have really a fine record and strong support in the community. And it's an appropriate step in the movement of these folks to a less secure facility. So. This seems like something that absolutely needs to be done.
Thank you, Representative. And I know that I have spoken to the Mayor of St. Peter on a couple of different occasions about different work that's been going on. Is the Mayor and City Council aware of the current proposal, and have you talked to them about it, and what's the feeling? I know
we actually have a new Mayor in St. Peter, but the Mayor, the City Council, the Chamber of Commerce, the larger community is well aware of this. One of the strengths, every quarterly, we have what I call a community forensic liaison meeting, and I find it extremely valuable. I try to attend all of those meetings, as does the city police, the chief of police for the city, other members of the House and Senate, the county sheriff, the Chamber of Commerce. The point is community members join in a meeting and we get updated on programming at both the security hospital and at the sex offender program. The conversations in those committees, in those meetings, are consistently positive and supportive for the work that goes on at the St. Peter Regional Treatment Center. It is considered an asset to the community, but also a responsibility of the community, and those work together. And it's hard to overstate how important this is to St. Peter, but also I would argue how important St. Peter is to state-operated services for the state of Minnesota. It's a symbiotic relationship that has been worked at over many, many decades, and it's a mature relationship. And I hope the legislature recognizes that the asset that the community of St. Peter provides for both of these facilities.
Thank you, Representative, and I think we do, and also appreciate the credit that goes to both DHS as well as the local officials for really creating a good partnership, and that they are good neighbors and surprise a lot of people with that, given the somewhat contentious and controversial things that happen from time to time. So do appreciate that, and also appreciate you coming and bringing the testifiers before us today. 2395 is laid over, and thank you for your time today. Next up, we have Representative Baker. Representative Baker has House File 2776. Representative Baker, welcome to the committee. This will be for information only. I believe this is currently in the Reform Committee, but we do want to offer an opportunity. Also want to thank you for inviting us down to your community also to tour the facilities, and would welcome you for a discussion on 2776. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We have a couple of testifiers today to talk about the one thing I think has been sort of lacking, and that is the children that are suffering through mental health. Wilmer in Kaneohe County has been fortunate to house the only state hospital for children in Minnesota. and they have done an exceptional job there. They have leased out a building for a number of years since the county and a private business kind of bought the old regional treatment center. And so we are actually in a dilemma where our facility has been really not invested in much at all in the last several years. And the governor did not put anything in his proposal for bonding this year, and I'm here to ask the committee that we look at that whole issue. Not having a state hospital for the most vulnerable kids is, I think, very alarming. So what I have today, Mr. Chair, is the medical director, and we've got another testifier, and I'll wrap up with things there because I know time is limited. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, and welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself for the record, and it's Dr. Real,
Realmuto.
Realmuto. Thank you for coming today. Please proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thank you. I am George Realmuto. I'm a child and adolescent psychiatrist. I'm a tenured professor at the University of Minnesota in the Department of Psychiatry, and none of my projects have been reviewed adversely by the bioethics department or any other investigation that's currently going on in my department. I also am speaking for the Minnesota Psychiatric Society, which is the professional organization of psychiatrists, and I am also speaking for the Minnesota Child and Adolescent Psychiatry Society, which represents the child psychiatrists of the state. I also speak for the families that need the service and the kids who have very acute, severe, chronic, complex, long-term psychiatric illnesses. This group, these people, strongly urge you to provide bonding support to relocate and maintain the appropriation for the Child and Adolescent Behavioral Health Service in order to ensure its specialized services continue for youth with complex psychiatric illnesses. This CABS, as you know, has been recognized for its success and quality by the Centers of Medicaid and Medicare, which is the organization that reviews hospitals for that quality of care. CABS is a specialized mental health program operated by DHS and meets the needs of children with serious mental health challenges. CABS is the only state-supported service, as you have heard. CABS hospital component offers a safe, youth, and family-responsive setting in a tertiary care level of service. Comprehensive assessment, intensive treatment, specialized mental health problems. We do something, or CABS does something that's different from community hospitals. We have a very high-level PhD behavioral analyst. This particular person could have been the chair of psychology at Harvard had he chosen to move there, but he did not. He is at Willmar. So we have behavioral analysts and we have high-level psychologists. We have occupational therapy, we have dietary services, we have a great group of staff who have shown up today. We have a therapist who works with cognitive behavioral therapy for traumatized children, and we have special services for kids with autism, fetal alcohol, TBI, and genetic abnormalities that other community programs do not offer. And as you heard, we've lost our lease. We need a new place. We hope that this you will support this bonding bill. We have... So what is the need for hospital beds for children and adolescents? One of the documents that you have in front of you is a report done by the Wilder Foundation that reviewed the needs of each county and the lead agencies for social services in each county. What they found was number one issue was the number of child and adolescent psychiatric beds. The next one was the providers, child and adolescent psychiatrists. And the third item was residential treatment centers that could treat kids with severe mental illness and aggression. That was the top three items that was identified in the DHS gaps analysis. They also went on to show that over the past two-year period, 25% of that of those groups showed that the number, their access to inpatient child and youth psychiatric beds had decreased. 33% reported residential treatment options became less available. 35% noted a decrease in access to psychiatric providers. 29% said that medication management was less available. Compared to 2 years ago, we are not in a good place. We are in a worse place. So to close, so let me do a little math problem with you. Our length of stay is about 30 days. Let's say it's 28 days. We have a shortage of beds for children and adolescents in the community. The length of stay in a community hospital is 7 days. There are some cases that require 30 days. If we leave those children in those community hospitals for 30 days, four cases that need to come in through the emergency room won't come into the hospital. If we are able to go to our census of nine, that means you need to build another psychiatric hospital in the state of Minnesota. That's 9 times 4 is 36, a 36 hospital child and adolescent psychiatric facility to serve those cases that come into emergency rooms and do not have access to a community hospital bed. Those complex cases do not get served in 7 days. They take a month. We do that kind of work, and we have cases from Prairie Care, Fairview, Essentia, Prairie St. John's, Abbott Northwestern that are referred to us for that specialized level of care. These are cases that have been readmitted 4, 5, and 6 times over the past couple of months. That level of care is not working. They come to us, and we have some very good outcomes.
Thank you, Dr. Realmuto. And one or two questions that I had. First up is we had passed in our budget ongoing appropriations for CABS at Willmar, and that appropriation has not been utilized but has in fact been booked as savings within the governor's budget. And also I've noticed that the CABS facility is not on the governor's list of projects to be built. Have you had discussions with Department of Human Services about the priorities and if this is not a priority, how those priorities are going to be met throughout the state of Minnesota?
There have been a number of plans. One was for contract beds to be offered by Prairie Care. As far as I know, those negotiations have fallen apart. So what we are looking for in the near future is no place for this very highly intensive acute group of patients.
So I just want to underscore that for the committee that we passed a bill for ongoing appropriations. We have a place and money to care for these people, and currently the plan is we have no plan moving forward. So, Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have another testifier here today. I think this would be a good time to hear from Barb.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Barb Laidlaw, and I work as a mental health program assistant at the Adolescent Behavioral Health Services Program, commonly referred to as CABS, and I get to work directly with the kids. CABS is, by definition, a safety net program. The children we care for are the most vulnerable youth in Minnesota. They exhibit behavior so extreme and dangerous that other treatment programs turn them away. Most of the children we serve have been sent to us from other treatment programs. We are their only hope. And there is hope. We had the opportunity to provide for a four-year-old this year. This little one was referred to us by her county worker after her family was unable to keep her safe. No hospital, group home, foster home, or respite home in the state would accept her. Her social worker actually stayed overnight in the office with her to keep her safe until they could bring her to us. This little one was admitted to our program where she received excellent care, play therapy, pet therapy, sensory interventions, social skills training, education and completing daily living skills, such as brushing teeth, brushing her hair, bathing. We were able to provide a safe and caring environment in which she flourished during her stay. And during her stay, the county was able to work with her family, providing them with education and tools to help the little one succeed, and arranging additional supports for the family. When it came time for her to go, we constructed a social story to help her successfully transition home. At CABS, one of the best statements that can be used to describe is, you think you know, but you have no idea. Excuse me, I'm a little nervous. Okay, I would speculate that the vast majority of the people of Minnesota cannot fathom the kind of children we provide care to. Many of our kids are children who have been abused, neglected, exposed to chemicals before being born, treated the way no child deserves to be treated. These children often have many failed placements, and some are wards of the state. Our staff provide person-centered care to these kids to help them achieve the best life they can live. And it's very rewarding to see the kids learn and grow. We do, however, go through some tough times and work with challenging children. We have gone through periods of time we've shown up for work when daily aggressions were common due to the particular kids we were providing care to. But we keep coming back, and we keep coming back because we are committed to providing the best care we can to this near-forgotten population, these kids. I'm here to ask you for two things. First, oppose the Department of Human Services' proposal to close the CABS program. The most vulnerable youth need this program. Where are these kids going to go to get help they need? Second, CABS needs a new home. I urge you to support House File 2776, which would affirm the state's commitment to youth mental health services by providing an updated facility for that purpose. Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members, and Representative Baker, for your consideration and support on this very important issue.
Thank you for your testimony and for your work with the children. Representative Loeffler.
Great job. Well, Mr. Chair, if you have more testifiers, I would wait for that.
Do we have one more? Also, Ms. Abgerholden, would you like to testify on this one? Welcome back to the committee, Ms. Abgerholden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Sue Abgerholden, NAMI, Minnesota. So I just wanted to put this in a little bigger perspective. There is absolutely a need for programs for children who have these high needs. I took a phone call on both Saturday and Sunday this weekend from a pediatrician who was trying to find a place for a young teenager who was in a regular hospital because of injuries that she had made, and there was nowhere to send her. But I also want us to think very carefully about the type of program that we build. There was actually a report put together for the legislature back in 2014 about what to do about the CABS program. And one of the things we said is it needed to serve more children. Right now it serves around four, just we have a lot more kids that need it. Because of the structuring of Medicaid, we don't actually have to worry about a CABS program being 16 beds. You might remember last session you authorized 50 beds for psychiatric residential treatment facilities. They're not bound by the IMD exclusion. They can have more than 16 beds. One of the things that report looked at as well is where it should be. We know that there are problems recruiting some of the mental health professionals to Wilmer. The psychiatrists live in the Twin Cities. Should that facility serving these really high complex needs be in Wilmarsh, or should it be in a place that perhaps the Twin Cities or Rochester or closer to them, where you can maybe hire some of the additional mental health professionals to work with these children? So I think that from the mental health community isn't that we don't need a building. We do. The leases will run up. We're serving four kids. We need to serve more. The PRTFs will be coming on board, and we actually think that we need more bonding for those programs so that we don't replace our current residential beds with PRTF beds, but that we're actually expanding our system. So I just kind of wanted to put that out there, and maybe, you know, you might want to go back, and I'll be happy to resend the report too, because I think we looked at this very carefully in terms of what do we need in terms of our children's mental health system. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Abderholden. And I think one of the things that that we heard when we were there is that the census was where it was based primarily because of staffing financing, of the availability of money, which was especially frustrating for us since we had given them more money to improve the census at the facility. So so there's plenty of frustration to go around as far as that goes. Let's see if we had a question specifically for Ms. Abderholden or for Representative Baker.
Well, Mr. Chair, my question was actually somewhat addressed by Ms. Abderholden, but I think it's an issue for both of the facilities, mental health treatment facilities that we heard today, and that we earlier heard one of the workers say that many of her patients would not have been there if they had gotten appropriate care earlier in their trajectory. And that to me is just absolutely damning on us and our system and how we've built it out. If we have people giving up 7 or 8 years of their life because they couldn't get the care that they needed early, and I know $46 million I think was put in last year to try and deal with early psychosis and that sort of thing. But I'm wondering if that's still true, and we can wait to get more information from people about this as well, because I really think we need to catch people before they decompensate to this point. And then we need to, as much as possible, I think with children, actually serve them close to their family in a place that they can get to. And that might mean, you know, looking at a different model than a large facility just in one part of the state, as opposed to a more decentralized set of services, so that those families can actually get there and visit that child who must be going through a very frightening experience. And maybe their support system isn't their family for some of those who've been abused. Maybe it's that social worker. But to see a friendly face that you see and trust has to be a part of recovery and therapy, I think, for most kids.
Representative Hamilton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And building off a little bit of what Representative Loeffler said, and that's one of the concerns that I have anytime we're talking about things like this. You tend to see facilities being built in the cities around Rochester, et cetera. And like the doctor had said, we have the talent. We do. We have individuals that are very, very educated, knowledgeable, and, again, the talent to address a lot of these issues out in greater Minnesota as well. Representative Baker, you've been a champion on this, and I want to say thank you. You've helped educate me on the issue and the need around all this as well. And I had a question for Barb. It's Barb, right? Barb, I want to ask you the same question because you did a very nice job in your testimony. But again, my question goes back to you. Why do you do it? You know, I understand you said the importance for the child, and I get that and understand it. But what do you get out of it as well?
Helping the kids. It's for the kids. It's about the kids. It's definitely not for the money, because some days we should get hazard pay, okay. In all honesty. But it's a desire to help them, I guess, the best way to describe it.
Well,
you know, to see them get better.
You know, Mr. Chairman, and I like to hear that too. When individuals come down, I like to hear the human side of things as well. I mean, what's behind all this, the motivation? Everybody that comes down here and testifies, and this happened last week, everybody that comes down here and testifies are in it for the best interest of the patient.
Yeah, it's like, well, who's going to take care of the kids?
Exactly. You know? So, again, I want to offer my support, Representative Baker, and once again say thank you for carrying this. And we do need this facility in Wilmer, southwestern Minnesota.
And we want to thank you for your work and also for the work you do on behalf of the kids. And Dr. Rimoto, I think, brought it up that that really I think Greater Minnesota can be competitive for medical talent, for physicians and researchers and doctors to provide care. And my, you know, I would never want to leave Wilmer. I don't think if I moved in there, it's such a beautiful facility and place. It looks like a beautiful place to work and live. So I wouldn't be worried about retaining talent to Wilmer. I would be worried. I would worry that our physicians would go down there and not want to leave. Mm-hmm. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm glad we're talking about this location issue because that is what I wanted to bring up. And I guess I wanted to ask Dr. Realmuto about that because, like Representative Loeffler, my thought was, is this, you know, I mean, I'm totally with you on wanting to make sure that we provide this level of care and that we have appropriate places and appropriate personnel. But if we're talking about building a whole new facility, in terms of reaching, providing care to the entire state, do you have a thought about, you know, is Wilmer the best place to do this? And then secondarily, Mr. Chair, I'd love to hear from the Department of Human Services because I'd really like to understand kind of where we are with this, that they were going to make, they were making plans and, you know, where all that is and what their reaction is to this. So if you would, Dr.
Yes, Chair Dean and Representative Liebling. The kind of care that you get at CABS, let's make a medical analogy. If you needed a heart transplant, that's what we do. How many heart transplant centers do you need in Minnesota? It's the highest level of care. Half of our patients are from outstate Minnesota. The other half are from the metro area. It's not a large number of patients. There are many hospitals in metro areas. We need one very high-level intensive care hospital for children, and it happens to be right now in Wilmer, and you would have to travel for your heart transplant some distance. That's the equivalent analogy to what we deliver in terms of mental health care for kids.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Dr. Realmuto, I don't know if it's exactly equivalent. I mean, I hear what you're saying, but in terms of, is there no issue about families being able to get there and, you know, the kind of thing that Representative Loeffler brought up about, and I get it that wherever you are in the state, if there's one place, somebody's going to have to travel, but I would think that the ability of families to get to where the child is being treated might be an issue. Is that not so important when you get to this level?
Dr. Realmuto.
Chairman Dean, Representative Liebling, if it was in the metro area, those from outstate would be traveling a long way. I don't know how to distribute this service throughout the state. What we do, however, is have video conferencing, so we can download on a parent's computer a kind of a FaceTime?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, right. And they can communicate with their kid. The quality is very good, so they can see their kid and have interactions on a daily basis with them. It saves a lot of time and travel. Telemedicine is all about that. So we have used that technology for that purpose to connect parent and kid. You know, there's also the telephone. But you can see your kid when it's on your computer. Our screens are bigger than that. So when the kid sees the parent, it's a big parent.
Thank
we do what we can to connect families and kids, given the distance.
Thank you. Representative Baker.
And again, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think, again, location has been an issue for a bit of a conversation. I think what's important to know, too, Representative Liebling, is that Wilmer has been hosting CABS since 1965 when the Regional Treatment Center was there. We've got tremendous staff that are still there. They have been passionately working with these kids. They want to continue to do that as well. Just like we have facilities in Moose Lake and St. Peter, Greater Minnesota have some of the most outstanding employees, and I just would love to have the state always remember we are one Minnesota. So traveling would be a distance issue for anybody, as the doctor pointed out. So I just know that Candelay County and where the kids have been taken care of already, it should stay there. I really believe that firmly. We've got a fabulous staff, and we need to continue that service.
Thank you, Representative Baker. We do appreciate your time, and also want to thank Dr. Realmuto and all of the folks who traveled up today from Wilmer. We do appreciate that. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Murphy, we are wrapping up.
I know, Mr. Chair, and it'll be brief. Representative Baker, what is the future for this piece of legislation since this is an informational-only hearing?
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Murphy. I believe that the plan is to go to the Capital Bonding Committee for consideration. Is that the path this is on at this point?
Yeah, and it's the bill itself rests in policy at the moment, but as you know, bonding bills can be picked up from any portion of the process along the way. So we do appreciate the folks coming in today for at least a hearing on this. So thank you so much, and we are adjourned.